The AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. New York City police continue to build the case against Luigi Mangione, accused assassin of the United Healthcare chief executive.
Investigators say they have their first forensic match. From fingerprints on a water bottle and snack bar wrapper near the crime scene to the ghost gun police say was used to murder United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. Detectives also now have what they consider to be a confession, a spiral notebook that sources say contains plans for how to kill Thompson.
ABC's Aaron Katursky, Mangione fighting extradition. On a vote of 281 to 140, the House passed the nearly $900 billion National Defense Authorization Act funding the military. It also bars gender-affirming treatment for the children of service members. The United Nations General Assembly voted 158 to 9 approval to a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Israel and the U.S. were among the nine who voted no. This is ABC News. The head of the richest pharmaceutical company in the world announced studies to determine if weight loss drugs can fight various addictions.
Weight loss drugs are good at this, says David Ricks.
They are reducing that desire cycle.
Ricks, the chief of Eli Lilly, which makes one of those popular drugs, Zepbound, wants to see if that help with impulse control can be extended.
Next year, you'll see Lilly start large studies in alcohol abuse, in nicotine use, even in drug abuse.
And?
We'll also begin studies in anti-inflammatory conditions.
Which are considered links to various illnesses. Rick spoke at the Economic Club of Washington.
ABC's Chuck Sievertson. His name was George Kreske, Jr. Generations of TV watchers knew him as the amazing Kreskin. His friend reports Kreskin died Tuesday at home in Caldwell, New Jersey. The mesmerizing entertainer and mentalist was popular for decades. George Kreske, Jr., the amazing Kreskin, was 89 years old when he passed away. Richard Cantu, ABC News.
It's the center of the Kringle-making world. Racine County wears the crown, and bakers like those at O&H create more than 10,000 of the delicate oval-shaped pastry every single day.
Just a great pastry. One that's hard to make, though, hard to replicate.
Peter Olison is a third-generation owner. O&H is celebrating its 75th year, but do you know if Wisconsin considers the Kringle our official pastry? The answer coming up.
The 500-square-foot corner bakery to offering our products by mail.
Baker Mike Massanellis says their Kringle is shipped near and far. The tradition began when the Danes came to Racine in the late 1800s, and it is that past and present which created our official state pastry, the Kringle, in 2013. And it's a you-can't-have-just-one-slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Packers get ready for Seattle. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers installing the game plan for the Seahawks in Seattle on Sunday Night Football. If Green Bay wins and the Falcons lose, the Packers could clinch a playoff spot with four games remaining. Packers tight end Tucker Kraft.
This next storm of games, we're going to be locked in. You know, we're going to be energized. We're going to bring that juice. We're going to be locked into our technique, our assignment, our alignment. If we win the line of scrimmage, we win each game.
College basketball, the Badgers lost down in Illinois last night, 86-80. That's Wisconsin's third loss in a row. NBA, the Bucks with a 114-109 win over the Orlando Magic, and that means the Bucks are headed to the NBA Cup tournament in Las Vegas this weekend. After the game, Damian Lillard praised teammate Bobby Portis for his leadership.
You always want to make sure that you behave in a way that's respectable even when it's not going your way, because it's going to turn. You want people to know, you know, it's always great to see when Bobby is doing his thing. You know, it's infectious and it changes our team.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Incredibly underrated actress Linda Cardellini has agreed to join the cast of HBO's DTF St. Louis. The three-time Emmy-nominated Cardellini joins series regulars Jason Bateman and David Harbour. According to Variety, DTF St. Louis is a dark comedy and will broadcast 7 episodes. The show tells the story of a midlife crisis love triangle where one character ends up dead. Cardellini has been cast in the role of Carol. Harbour and Bateman are also executive producers. The show is currently in pre-production. Jamie Foxx has finally revealed during a stand-up comedy special what his illness was a couple years ago. The comedian, who told the crowd how happy he was to be back, also revealed what he was suffering from, a brain bleed. Fox went into surgery and says he woke up 20 days later with no idea of what happened. If you want to hear more about Fox's ordeal, check out his comedy special, which is currently streaming on Netflix. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Any lingering flurries wrap up this evening, clearing overnight, cold, low 0 to 5 below, wind chills to 20 below. For tomorrow, sunshine and a high near 10 above. Warming up, though, to the mid-20s by Friday with a wintry mix Friday night and Saturday. Currently, it's 10 above.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, a law review, James Santel will join me to discuss the ramification of FBI Director Christopher Wray stepping down, what it means for the FBI specifically and the DOJ in general. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cup, Henry Cup gave me.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts.
Knee. And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee. And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local and national Native news and events, and as you know, Chuzhunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This episode is presented in partnership with the City of Minneapolis for Minneapolis AIR, American Indian Relations, who hosts monthly conversations on the second Wednesday of the month regarding happenings that impact our Native communities in Minneapolis.
Hey, we are grateful for the partnership to keep up to date on topics that can better support our largest urban Indian population in the country. And I'll pass things over to Minneapolis AIR American Indian Community Specialist and guest host, Christine McDonald.
Thank you, Robert. I'm so happy to be here with you guys. Buju, Ogodaki, Gabuik, Nindishnaka, Sajishak, Nindundem. I am Christine McDonald. I'm the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And joining us today, our guests are Commander Yolanda Wilkes and Kevin Carlisle of the Minneapolis Police Department Settlement Agreement Implementation Team. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. We're going to jump right into our questions and conversation. So, Commander Wilkes, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what you do for the city?
Thanks for having me, first of all. So I am the commander of the implementation unit, actually the implementation division. And within the implementation division for the Minneapolis Police Department, our role is focusing on the MDHR, Minnesota Department of Human Rights, settlement agreement, and ultimately and the DOJ consent decree that will eventually be coming down the pipeline as well. So with an implementation, it's just to oversee the parameters of both of those agreements and make sure that they're implemented. And it's something that will meet the community needs as well as overall the big picture, getting us towards our common goal. And that's effective policing.
How about a little bit about your experience in the department, how long you've been with the police department?
I've been with the department for over 16 years. I worked in just about every precinct within Minneapolis, worked in several specialty units. I had a lot of experience. I think about the only precinct I haven't directly worked in, but have some experience is second precinct, and that's Northeast Southeast Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. The majority of my career has been downtown, third precinct, and north side. Moving forward just a little bit with my experience, I found that there was a lot of gaps in the understanding for myself personally, as far as things that I wanted to know, things I wanted to further myself in, as far as how we were interacting with the community, what we were doing, I wanted to make sure I understood it clearly and that I was it. So if I don't understand what I'm doing, it's hard for me to go out there and implement what I'm doing or actually do the work. And so I found that, you know, going to a lot of, you know, asking questions about use of force and asking questions about certain jobs that I was interested in, I might as well just apply to be an instructor so that I get more, get more experience, more understanding. And then instead of being the one asking these questions, I could be the one answering those questions on a level where you understand, not assuming that everyone has those answers or everyone understood or understands how to do this and do it correctly. So I worked in several different specialty units. Bike became an instructor in different capacities. I was a use of force instructor. I was a procedural justice instructor. And ultimately, I think the last part of instructions or being an instructor was emergency driving. I didn't want to be that person that was that couldn't drive. But I also know when you become an instructor, they teach you more advanced. And I wanted to know like all the nuances, you know, so that I can come back and help someone else.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. So, Kevin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for the city?
Yes, I can. As you stated, my name is Kevin Carlisle, born and raised in North Minneapolis. So I'm from the city, graduated from North High School, Polar. I have a master's in business administration. I'm also a licensed social worker. That's like my education background. I've been in human services for over 20 years. I've worked for nonprofits in the city of Minneapolis, probably the majority of my life. I'm a person who has a passion when it comes to being involved with the community. So many people touched me when I was growing up. When I grew up, the community center was like a cornerstone of the neighborhood. Parents knew who worked at the community centers. They helped you with your homework. You know, you had the snacks, you had the programs there. First time I ever got to go to camp, ride a horse, you know, was through the programs there. So the community centers was such a big impact on me. The reason I do the work I do, because so many people took time out of their schedules and gave me their time when I was younger and coming up. So the work that I do right now in my current role is being the manager of community engagement in the Minneapolis Police Department. It allows me to give back to so many who gave to me, to also be a voice for some people who feel like their voices are not being heard, and also be the bridge with the community as well as the police department, and try to continue to build those relationships, the trust, and everything back up in the community.
Yeah, it's important. Thank you. Commander Wilkes, can you tell us more what the implementation is tasked with doing?
Yeah, of course. So we've been tasked with carrying out the parameters stated before within the MDHR settlement agreement and the DOJ consent decree. And what that looks like is we had to develop this unit full of from scratch, having no blueprint, full of civilians. With the exception of three sworn officers or sworn employees, and they had to specialize in different areas of the agreement to carry out the parameters. And so when we look at those different subsections or units within a division, we have the community engagement that was really just focused on community engagement, engaging the community, bringing the community together so that we can do this together, collaboratively work out the parameters. And so we also have within that division is the policy folks, and those policy folks, they were there to not only take back what was coming back from the community engaging or the engagement sessions, but they were there to look at those notes, to digest those notes, to incorporate those notes and come up with a revised policy. And I know you're probably going to ask this sooner or later, but that's been a task, having a unit or division that was fairly new and still had to be acclimated to the city itself. And also to the community. Within that, we also have our training SMEs who have the task of looking at the policy once it's been revised and once it's been approved, and they have to develop a curriculum based on that policy that met the needs of the community. We have our data analysts, and those data analysts have been tasked with, and I'll just put them along with the administrative analysts because we have both of them, but they've been tasked with pulling numbers, looking at what we're falling short, what we can improve on through data. So data-driven approaches. And so with that, they've been tasked with bringing those numbers back so that we can ultimately, we can ultimately have a solution and not be looking for the solution. We know exactly where the problem lies. Mm-hmm. We also have within that unit our compliance folks, and our compliance, they're there to show accountability and oversight.
Yeah.
And that's mainly what their role is. So we're looking at everything and bringing it all together.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex, recording sexual acts without permission, hurting someone because of their sexual orientation, raping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger, purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Programming on Native Roots Radio is supported in part by MinSure. Looking for health insurance but not sure where to start? MinSure has you covered. You can find discounts, compare private health plans, and see if you qualify for free or low-cost insurance. Plus, get help from an expert so you save on the coverage you need. Enroll online by December 18th for coverage starting January 1st. Get started today at MinSure.org. That's MNSure.org.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
As we age, it's important to invest in our health and to help protect it. Like the flu, COVID-19 is always changing. That's why it's important to stay up to date on your vaccines. By getting the flu and COVID-19 vaccines, you can renew your body's defenses and lower the risk of getting sick. Get your health boost and protect yourself against the flu and COVID. Find vaccines near you at vaccines.gov. Again, that's vaccines.gov. Vaccines.gov.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This episode is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis AIR, American Indian Relations, and here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back. Thank you. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And joining us today are Commander Yolanda Wilkes and Kevin Carlisle with the Minneapolis Police Department's implementation team. We're going to jump right back into our conversation. Kevin, can you tell us how you have been engaging the community in this process, including specifically the Native community?
Yes, I can, Christine. So when we began with the implementation unit, we had a court order document that we had to do 9 community engagement meetings per the settlement agreement with Minneapolis Department of Human Rights and the Minneapolis Police Department. So in doing that, we did that between August through September of 2023. We did 9 community engagement meetings, which we wanted to focus on different parts of the city of Minneapolis, try to have meetings throughout the city of Minneapolis with their different locations of the precincts. The topics that we focused on was use of force, stop, search, and arrest, citations, non-discriminatory policing, and mission, vision, values, and goals. What we wanted to do was get the community's input on what they thought about the policies and did they understand what was going on. One of the things, and being a resident, you know, born and raised in Minneapolis, one of the things we wanted to make sure from the police department that they were part of the process as these policies are being created. So we wanted to get their input on those each topics and do it throughout the city. And then the policies will continue to be changed and brought back to the community for more input. But we really wanted to get the community's input as the changes are happening within the police department. To your question pertaining to what are we doing in the Native American community, as we did the 9 community engagement meetings throughout the city of Minneapolis, we also did 5 culturally specific meetings as well with the Native American community, African American, East African, the Latino community, and the LGBTQIA plus community as well. What we continue to do, and we've been doing for about a year and a half now, we're very involved in Native community meetings. We go to the public safety, which is biweekly, and we do that at All Nations Church. And then we also go to the, we do that at Minneapolis American Indian Center. Then we go to the Unsheltered and Opioids meeting at All Nations Church. And that one, the Unsheltered one, is the one we go to biweekly. And then the public safety one, we go once a month. And we've been doing that for a year and a half. And it allows us to know what's going on and what are the concerns from the Native American community, which I'm able to bring information back to Commander Wilkes. And then she's able to talk to Chief O'Hara about if there's any concerns or things that are going on as well. It allows us to also build relationships, not only when we're looking for information, but also build relationships that are genuine at the same time for me and my staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to be there and hear firsthand from community as it's going on, concerns and needs. Thank you for being at those meetings. Commander Wilkes, are there opportunities still for people to get involved in the feedback process?
Yeah, absolutely. So Minneapolis, we have an implementation updates page that they can go on and we post current updates as soon as we get them. Also on that page, we just put on a MinnesotaMN.gov delivery. Mm-hmm. So if you want to sign up for automatic updates, when we post things, if they subscribe, they'll automatically get sent the email. I would urge, though, because we just started that, we wanted to make the process smoother, that if they so happen not to get an email back, to just send us an email so we can check into it. We're finding that sometimes people are putting their email in incorrectly, or it just could be an error use. So I just want to put that out there. Mm-hmm. But if they want to sign up for automatic updates on the implementation updates page, that would be the fastest way to get updates. That page is constantly being updated.
That's great.
And I think to answer your question, what we like to do, and we're working through policy right now, which is such a big task, but eventually we would like to have separate meetings, probably once a month, with certain community members, just to kind of update them before those policies hit the page or the updates page. So instead of saying we're working on this policy, we would like for Kevin and his team to be out there within the community saying, hey, this is the upcoming policy we're going to be looking at, to give people and the readers enough time or more time to digest, because we don't all speak the same language, especially when it comes to policy. So giving people a heads up before those policies get sent out for review.
Right. Thank you. Kevin, where and how can people learn about the implementation unit's work that you're doing?
I think Commander Wolf's kind of touched on it. If you go to the implementation update page, which is on the City of Minneapolis, you can go to www.MINNEAPOLISMN.gov/resident-services/public-safety/police-public-safety-investigations-settlement. That is a lot.
But I'm wondering if you could just like search implementation team once you get to the city's website.
You could.
If I could just jump in, I was just going to say, you can just, once you get to the city website, search implementation updates. Yeah. It'll bring you directly to that page. And we can also send a link for you guys to post as well.
Great. Yep, we can do that. Thank you. And Commander Wilkes, I've heard about a group called ALIFA. Can you tell me what ALIFA is and how they're involved in the implementation work or the consent decree work?
Absolutely. So ALIFA, they are the independent evaluator who was selected by the city of Minneapolis to oversee compliance for the MDHR, both MDHR settlement agreement and the DOJ consent decree. So they will be monitoring us for compliance. They will be updated on their website as well. As a matter of fact, we have on March 17, we have our first year, our year mark coming up. And there's some things that we're supposed to be in compliance with within that first year. We're working towards that. And ALIFA will be presenting that information out, whether we are in compliance or not. Currently, they're working with the city. They've given us their measurements on how they're going to measure us, and now it's for us to do the work.
Again, the community can keep an eye on the engagement work that's happening. I know ALIFA is that independent evaluator. They recently did do a couple of meetings. One was at Sabathany and one was at North High, actually, yes. Kevin and Haley. It was kind of more like I felt like it was more like an introduction. This is who we are, and these are things that we're going to be reporting back. So it sounds like March will be the first time that they'll be actually providing some real feedback about work.
So I believe they're going to provide that real feedback in March. And I also will say this, that they're going to be out every 4 months to hold community engagement sessions.
Okay.
And this was the conversation I had with them. So, and I think it's part of the agreement. Or if it's not part of the agreement, this is something that they're going to be doing every 4 months.
Okay. I think it's their contracted agreement with the city, I think. But as far as providing, I know me, myself, that's one of the things I like to do is push out meeting information around that. And I'll be able to provide community with notification from ALIFA of their upcoming meetings, too.
Yes. So,
and then, Kevin, does the settlement agreement even affect the Native community?
Does a settlement agreement affect?
How does it affect the community? If it does?
The settlement agreement, I will say it affects the Native community. I think it affects all communities. I think the key thing is, what we want to focus on is people feeling, things are lawful. They're non-discriminatory policing that's happening. Better public safety support for Minneapolis. Reforms addressing issues like use of force, supervision, accountability. And also just build and enhance trust, wellness for officers. I think this is not just the community, but it's also, the Minneapolis Police Department is the community as well. Mm-hmm. And how do we bring both together and how do we move forward as we continue to build the trust back in the community and also be transparent as much as possible so people feel comfortable and open when it comes to being part of the city of Minneapolis and being part of this community. Mm-hmm. And I know Chief O'Hara, I know Commander Wilkes, I know there's so many, the chief and the commander and officers who are working diligently to make sure that we continue to build the trust and also stand by the side of the officers who support the community, but as well as the community supports the officers as well, as we continue to try to improve the situation and better make Minneapolis a better police department and lead by example throughout the country.
Thank you. Thank you. I think, the one last thing is to make sure that folks are able to get to the city's website for more information.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. New York City police continue to build the case against Luigi Mangione, accused assassin of the United Healthcare chief executive.
Investigators say they have their first forensic match, from fingerprints on a water bottle and snack bar wrapper near the crime scene to the ghost gun police say was used to murder United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. Detectives also now have what they consider to be a confession, a spiral notebook that sources say contains plans for how to kill Thompson.
ABC's Aaron Katursky, Mangione fighting extradition. On a vote of 281 to 140, the House passed the nearly $900 billion National Defense Authorization Act funding the military. It also bars gender-affirming treatment for the children of service members. The United Nations General Assembly voted 158-9 approval to a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Israel and the U.S. were among the nine who voted no. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Packers get ready for Seattle. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers installing the game plan for the Seahawks in Seattle on Sunday Night Football. If Green Bay wins and the Falcons lose, the Packers could clinch a playoff spot with four games remaining. Packers tight end Tucker Kraft.
This next storm of games, we're going to be locked in. You know, we're going to be energized. We're going to bring that juice. We're going to be locked into our technique, our assignment, our alignment. If we win the line of scrimmage, we win each game.
College basketball, the Badgers lost down in Illinois last night, 86-80. That's Wisconsin's third loss in a row. NBA, the Bucks with a 114-109 win over the Orlando Magic, and that means the Bucks are headed to the NBA Cup tournament in Las Vegas this weekend. After the game, Damian Lillard praised teammate Bobby Portis for his leadership.
You always want to make sure that you behave in a way that's respectable even when it's not going your way, because it's going to turn. You want people to know, you know, it's always great to see when Bobby is doing his thing. You know, it's infectious and it changes our team.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Home Alone is at the top of many people's viewing list every holiday season. According to an Instagram poll conducted by the website Pubity, Home Alone was voted the greatest Christmas movie of all time. The film garnered 446,000 votes to take first place ahead of The Nightmare Before Christmas, which came in second. If you want to be entertained, read the comments on the Instagram poll where people argue about Christmas movies, and not exactly with holiday cheer. Other runner-ups included The Santa Claus, Christmas Vacation, Elf, and It's a Wonderful Life. You want to talk about range as an actor? Who could play Bruce Springsteen, a wrestler in Iron Claw, and the son of Jabba the Hutt? The answer is Jeremy Allen White. White has just signed on to play Jabba the Hutt's son in The Mandalorian and Grogu. Variety reports that White will provide the voice for the role and that this is the Emmy-winning actor's first role in a major movie franchise. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Any lingering flurries wrap up this evening, clearing overnight, cold, low 0 to 5 below, wind chills to 20 below. For tomorrow, sunshine and a high near 10 above. Warming up, though, to the mid-20s by Friday with a wintry mix Friday night and Saturday. Currently, we're at 8.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Here's why I'm glad I don't work in an office. My wife is always talking about, she's a teacher. They put donuts in the teacher's lounge. There's sweets, there's snacks. It wasn't that way here today, but Nikki keeps those Biscoff cookies out there. I probably ate 12 of those today. The phrase "you are what you eat" is very true, because I was sitting in the office earlier prepping the show and I felt kind of doughy and I'm like, I feel like a Biscoff cookie.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Jeffrey from Madison.
I worked for the city of Madison for 34 years. Act 10 cost me $42,000.
Yep.
In 1977, the state of Wisconsin passed a law that says public employees cannot strike. With Act 10, now we can't bargain for working conditions and benefits, so they basically turned public employees into second-class citizens.
Yes.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Earl Ingram.
On the next show, we'll go in the pharmacy with Dr. Omar before talking about giving back for the holidays with Major Beverly Bates from the Salvation Army Christmas Family Feast.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, I want to welcome everyone back to Minneapolis Air, presented by Native Roots Radio. We have our guest host and her groovy guest, Christine McDonald, here, and she is taking the ball in a good way and running with it. Thanks, Christine. This is really awesome information, and I'm sure everyone's really interested everywhere around Turtle Island. So let's welcome back again. Oh,
me glitch, Robert. I'm enjoying being here. Now, our next guest, for the first time ever, the city of Minneapolis has a poet laureate. Hyde E. Erdrich was just appointed last month. Hyde is Ojibwe, enrolled at Turtle Mountain. She has received 2 Minnesota Book Awards, as well as fellowships and awards from the Library of Congress, National Poetry Series, Native Arts and Cultures Foundation, the Loft Literary Center, First Peoples Fund, and others. On Monday, she was honored at the first gathering of the new Minneapolis City Council and presented a new poem written specifically for the occasion. Hyde joins us here today. Thank you so much for coming on the program today, Hyde.
Amigwich Christine, Hyde Erdrich, Dijinikaz, Jaganashimong, Majikwe, Indigo, Mukaduk, Wikjuwing, Ndunjaba, Minawa, Dakota King, Guy Kabikang, and Da. So I'm Hyde, and I live here in Minneapolis, grew up in North Dakota and near the Sistine Wahpeton, Oyate, and I'm in Old Turtle Mountain.
Thank you. So I understand that being poet laureate isn't just an honorary title. Can you tell us about your duties as the new Minneapolis inaugural poet laureate?
Well, it's really interesting because it's the first poet laureate. I'm sort of introducing people to the position and helping understand what it can be. I have events that I'll do, public events for the city government, as well as for the state of Minnesota, if asked. And I get to teach some classes at the Loft Literary Center, as well as do a special project. So it's kind of developing as the year goes on, but that's what I know I'll be doing so far.
Thank you. So your duty as Minneapolis Poet Laureate is to present 2 classes through the Loft Literary Center. Can you tell us about your plans for those classes?
Yeah, those classes will be based around ekphrastic poetry. That's poetry that looks at visual art. I've spent a lot of my work life working with Native American visual artists and others in the Twin Cities. And I find it a huge strength of our city, something that I love to showcase whenever I can and that I love to, you know, contribute to in ways that I can. So I am going to teach 2 classes about writing about visual art, how poetry and visual art intersect, and also other arts like choreography, and how, you know, Native aesthetic is music and dance and visual art and language all at once. So I hope to bring a little bit of that to my introduction to the role of poet laureate.
That's amazing. Another aspect of your year as Minneapolis Poet Laureate will be a special project of your choosing. Are you able to tell us more about what that project looks like?
Part of becoming the Poet Laureate and being selected for it was that we had to have a plan for what we wanted to do. And I had this overly ambitious plan, but I'll boil it down to listening sessions, poetry listening sessions, where I want to work in at least 4 neighborhoods in the city, probably based on the directions of the city, and listen to what the poets from those communities and other people have to say about their dreams for the city, and how they fit in the city, to understand what the poetry is from various communities, and to, you know, familiarize myself with it so that I can bring it back to the community in a form, probably a short poem film, but a form that could be worked into public art.
Oh, that sounds so exciting. I love tying that poem, the poetry, into those spaces, because I know in our community, we're not very tied to the brick and mortar of spaces, more into the sense of that location and what that means for us. Have you brought some of your poetry to share with us today?
Yeah, I would love to share the poem, the beginning of a poem that I wrote for the city council meeting on Monday. I decided that I would start with a poem that has multiple parts to it, and I will do a different part in each season throughout the year. So it's a poem for the four parts for the city of Minneapolis, and I'll read you just the first part. Winter. This is the city dreaming in its original language, Dakota home mapped on astronomical planes. So streets still chart the stars, tell us where to be in each season, river at spring equinox, sun up, lake at fall equinox, sundown. This is the city dreaming in winter, into the silence of frozen spaces in this bare year, the quiet broken by wishes, calling down the snow, calling for a home. The city makes its own way home, makes its many ways home. This is the city dreaming under cold and deep skies, on icy streets, moving with care. Winter swallows background noise, makes the perfect place to listen, to hear one another. Snow is just another sign for home. We can laugh at it together, whether we park on the odd side or on the other side, or find our street restricted. We plow on through. We are in it together. When the city dreams in winter, what does it learn? Listen to the city dreaming, calling us home in many languages. Listen to the city dreaming, moving toward a chorus, learning its multiple and singular voice.
That is so beautiful. I love that. There's so much in there that I love, especially where you talk about the streets. What was that part about the streets navigate the stars?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that I noticed living here. And I lived in St. Paul when I first moved to the Twin Cities, and I was told that a lot of the major roads were old Dakota trails. And one year I was driving down Franklin, headed toward the river, and it was the equinox. And just as the sun popped up, it was right in the middle of the road where you would get to the river. And then later on, I watched to see if it set at the lakeside of Franklin in the fall and in fall equinox, and it does. So these old roads are part of how Dakota people mapped their place in the universe, and it's such a very important place to Indigenous people. I really want to celebrate that and invite all kinds of people to understand the place they live.
Thank you so much. That's beautiful. I want to thank you for being here today. It was an honor to be at the council when you were presented with your proclamation. And I look forward to working with you and celebrating with you over the next year.
Thanks. It's so great. I'm looking forward to, you know, maybe there's a way I can bring some more Native poets onto air. So I look forward to that. The program is fantastic.
This is amazing. Thank you. There is going to be a public celebration of Hyde planned next week. It will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, January 18th at the Loft Literary Center at 1011 Washington Avenue South in Minneapolis. Miigwech Hyde.
Miigwech. Yeah,
thanks. Hyde, before you go, I got a quick question. When you lived in St. Paul, were there any roads in St. Paul? Because I've never heard that about Minneapolis that were old trails. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Ernie Whiteman told me that Snelling in St. Paul was also an old Dakota trail, and there were many that were mapped in a project, which I can't remember the name of right now, but yeah, so both sides of the river.
Wow, and two, I don't know if you have anything, we got a couple more minutes left in this segment. I'm wondering if you have any poem you'd like to read to our listening audience. I hate to put you on the spot, but do you have one handy or you know by heart that you could to tell our audience?
Well, I'll take a little look, and while I'm looking, I will say something about anybody who can see my avatar. I have a portrait that was done by the late great Jim Demme, a very good friend of mine, and it kind of shows my notion of poetry and visual art going together. And I'll read another really short poem that has connections between Native culture as being both poetic and visual, and it concerns dance. And this poem is called Sister Nations. We convene in a long dusk in the lasting corona of twilight in our prairie homeland's midsummer. We gather beneath our ancestor dancers, vivid whirling, magnetically arrayed giants or solar flares. However we know them, we remain theirs. Glass blue depth at our backs, we ease lush summer skies, a comfort to us. Three nations of sisters encamped in camp chairs in the dark beyond the dance arena's glare. We thrill together when a bear pushes her way into the circle. Her attitude commands us, her crouched inspection, once round, glancing at everyone in turn, sometimes rushing the crowd. She shakes a warning, claws the air, crosses her paws, then pauses, hunches into the darkness beyond us. Sisters, as her fur brushes past us, dark, warm, soft as this night, her beast breath left a blessing. We gasped and heard her roar, a true bear roar, before she threw her animal robe back and laughed her woman's laugh.
Wow. Beautiful.
I love that one.
Haley, do you have any questions before we let this our poet laureate of Minneapolis go? That is awesome.
I just really love the comparison between the bear and, you know, us as, you know, females and in Native communities, we're such, you know, matriarch societies. And it's just, I think you have very beautiful words, and thank you for being here today with us.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, I am such a bear person. I'm Mukwa Dotem. So I call my office the Den of Hyde Bear Nation, and it's really past my bear sleep nap time. So thank you so much.
we can agree with that.
Heidi, thank you so much. Kristen, we have a lot to talk about next segment. This has been just a fabulous inaugural show, and what great guests you have picked to represent this new program that we're partnering with. I'm excited. Let's talk a little bit more. You're listening to Native Roots Radio, Minneapolis Air. And, we will be right back after this short break.
It's okay to talk about mental health. It's okay to struggle. And it's okay to ask for help. It's important that we support one another and work together to end the stigma so that we can start to tell a different story about mental health and well-being in our community. If you're looking for support for yourself or want to find resources for a loved one, visit makeitokay.org to get started. That's makeitokay.org.
As we age, it's important to invest in our health and to help protect it. Like the flu, COVID-19 is always changing. That's why it's important to stay up to date on your vaccines. By getting the flu and COVID-19 vaccines, you can renew your body's defenses and lower the risk of getting sick. Get your health boost and protect yourself against the flu and COVID. Find vaccines near you at vaccines.gov. Again, that's vaccines.gov. Vaccines.gov.
Getting bus and train information in your language just got easier. Customers who call Metro Transit at 612-373-3333, again 612-373-3333, are able to select language options at the start of the call. To access information in Spanish, select option 2. For more information about other transit information tools, visit metrotransit.org/Spanish. That's metrotransit.org/Spanish.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air. Air stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis Air dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. Just a second here. I have to find out what the name of the show is again. Haley, it's
Minneapolis Air.
I wanted to see if you were paying attention. Hey, what a great first show, Christine. What great guests, and what a way to celebrate Minneapolis, too. And I think just hearing things like there's 130 recognized tribes represented in the city of Minneapolis, that blew my mind. Also, the roads. I mean, I've learned three or four things already just listening to your show here.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited for what we can bring in the future to this discussion and what information we can provide to community. There's a lot going on that people aren't aware of. Like I mentioned, even me growing up in the city of Minneapolis, I didn't know about neighborhood organizations and the opportunity to get involved, nor did I understand how they impacted the community. You know, neighborhood organizations have been around for, some of them have been around for 100 years, and we have had intentional work to make sure that those organizations are representative of the neighborhoods and the residents there. And some of the work that's come out of our department has been to help make sure that we have representation on those boards. And I was here in the department when we were able to see Native representation seen for the first time at the East Phillips Neighborhood Board. And those were residents out of Little Earth. So there's been a lot of great work done to help make sure that that education and participation happens in the public process.
Yeah. And I wonder, too, if you could explain a little bit more about MUD. And I know we talk a little bit about that on Native Roots Radio, but I know it was brought up today. And maybe you can educate our audience and Haley and I a little bit more about MUD.
Sure. So my participation is based on my role at the City of Minneapolis. I support the Memorandum of Understanding, which is entered into with the city and the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors Group. I think a lot of the things that we see happen in our community are really a result of what we sometimes call the Red Movement. So around the time when AIM originated. So MUD itself, what I was taught was it originated as well about 50 years ago, if not more, around the time when we had an influx of folks moving into the city. A lot of people don't really understand or realize that American Indians were also sold the American dream. You know, once we were forced onto reservations, they wanted to continue the assimilation. And told us, you know, come down to these cities, we'll provide housing for you, we'll make sure your kids are educated, we'll provide work for you. And a lot of times when our people showed up to these urban areas, there wasn't anything in place to do that. And so we naturally seen American Indian organizations come into place. And as they came into place, they really came and formed a group together to support each other. At that time, a lot of the funding for our programming came out of government entities. A lot of times it's from the city, it's from the county, it's from the state. What I was taught was that they came together to learn how to work with those entities and provide services and programs for our community. And so that still happens today. MUD is a collaborative of nonprofit organizations and the leadership from those organizations. So those are what are called voting members. And so MUD really is there. They represent themselves and they represent the community that they serve. So a lot of times the decisions that they make are in ways to best serve the community. And they have a monthly meeting where the voting members meet. And then there are also seven subcommittees that MUD hosts. And the subcommittees are where we really look to see community participate. We have, I can't sure if I can, off the top of my head, there's public safety. We used to have a housing subcommittee, but it now has been reprogrammed to be the Opioid and Unsheltered Community Crisis Response Committee, health and wellness, employment and economic development, arts and culture, education, which is really Phillips Indian Educators, as well as family preservation, which that one seems, that one is more focused on Indian child welfare.
Wow. Hey, we're here with Christine McDonald, and this is a special edition of Native Roots Radio entitled Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations. And I thought it was interesting too, and being an old person that I am, I don't mind being called Indian, and it was fun that if it was good enough for American Indian Movement, it's good enough for me to be called that. But it's a process. Words mean a lot, and I'm glad you guys explained the title of the show as well as you did.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that I got hit with. I think myself, my personal preference is Native. I prefer Native American. But in one of my first community meetings, there were a couple people who didn't agree with the term Native. And so there was a couple of community people who really gave that support, as well as why it should be the American Indian. And I think that really gives the city as a government entity some footing to use that language and stick with it based on the historical terminology that's been used.
Right, right. And I think that's important, because it's sometimes, you know, for people listening to the show and our Native community and also our white allies to fumble along that, what to call us sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you go by the same thing that Haley and I do. We prefer being called Ho-Chunk. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't. We do.
It might be a little awkward. when I introduce myself, I say I'm Anishinaabe and Hokpapa. Yeah. So even within that, it's not just the tribe, but actually the nation of people that I'm a part of.
Yeah. So well, I'm excited.
It's more complicated, you know, because myself too. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited to talk about February 17th a little more, and maybe we can get somebody on to talk about that before we have our monthly get-together, too, on Native Roots Radio, because at the Convention Center, I wonder if you can just elaborate a little bit on that with the last couple minutes we have on the
show. Absolutely. Thank you for asking that, because we have been doing this conference since 2012. And we had only 1 year, which was COVID, when we weren't able to do the conference. And so it's been during my whole duration with the department. And this is the first year that I'm co-lead on it. So I'm happy to be able to talk with it. And I hope next month I'll be able to get my my partner, the other co-lead, to be on the show with me as well. This is a yearly event that brings residents of Minneapolis, community groups, neighborhoods, and local government together. The conference is held at the Minneapolis Convention Center. There's opportunities to be involved as a workshop presenter, exhibitor, or a volunteer. Anyone planning to apply to be an exhibitor for the conference can do so online at our webpage. It's probably easiest just to search City of Minneapolis Community Connections Conference. One thing that is really interesting is it's grown every year that we haven't been in COVID. So I have invited folks, and the folks that I invite, you know, when you think of something that the government's going to put on, it's kind of a little like, doesn't really sound really exciting, but everybody who has come has really had a good time coming. And the lunch is free. The event is free. It's cold in February.
News from the center, WRCE. Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on this show, Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin will be joining us. Also, Paul Noonan to talk all things sports and Aaron Rodgers. Don't miss it.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot.
Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was, when they moved the camera, whenever it's like the red alert.
Right.
Yeah.
That was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to like fake like.
Right. Lean yeah, left. Straight. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. The White House touting numbers out of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention showing the largest reduction in overdose deaths ever.
New CDC data shows that overdose deaths were down by nearly 17% from July 2023 to July 2024, representing 500,000 fewer American deaths. Domestic policy advisor Neera Tanden said the new data shows the Biden administration's efforts to fight the opioid crisis are working. That includes making more affordable and widely accessible the drug naloxone, which is designed to reverse opioid overdoses.
ABC's Karen Travers. With 3 years left on his term, Christopher Wray resigned as FBI director. President-elect Trump, who appointed Wray, now wants Cash Patel to run the bureau. The Montana Supreme Court is leaving blocked for now a law banning gender-affirming treatment for transgender minors. There will be a trial on the law's legality. This is ABC News.
This